Today is November 10th, 2020. This is episode number 539. Hey, shush you. Number 539 of the Apple Context Machine. It's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. To get the full story on anything that we cover in this podcast, you can go to macobserver.com/ACM. Get show notes, things like that. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, which I'm going to be honest, you should, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to the show's Facebook group. BetterHelp is our sponsor this week. I'm going to tell you more about BetterHelp later in the show. And joining me, the third show in a row? One, Jeffrey, is it Jeffrey? I always forget.
That is what my parents named me, Jeffrey.
And that's with a J.
Because I'm not pretentious.
Jeffrey Gamet.
So it is so awesome to be here. And I feel very special. 3 weeks in a row.
Three shows in a row.
Excuse me. A slip of the tongue. Three shows in a row. And I feel compelled to point out your slip of the tongue from the beginning of the show. When you shushed me, I started to laugh because you said it's November 8th.
Oh, my God.
November 10th.
I did say that. It's December. It's November December 10th. 10th. It's December 10th. Why did you let me shush you? What's wrong with you? It's still your fault, by the way. You know, I'm still making it your fault.
Yeah, this checks out. But it was one of those things where you did it. It made me laugh. And since you wanted to shut me down right away, my initial thought was, fine, let him roll with it. You know.
Yeah. I mean, that's 'tis a fair cop, as the Brits might say.
Yeah. And also, that way all the listeners get to hear you say November 10th. And they all got to have a little bit of a laugh out of it. Also, it's really important that you do little things like that every now and then, even though I know I'm doing air quotes, intentional, so that people do realize it, that even though you appear more than human, you are just human.
I am gracious by doing so.
I agree.
All right. Speaking of gracious, Jeff.
Yeah, you're welcome that I showed up. Yes.
Thank you.
That's where you were going, right?
Of course. I was also going to go to Apple with their $550 AirPods Max. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? This was announced this week. All right, these are over-the-ear headphones using... Not the Beats moniker, not the Beats brand, which is owned by Apple, but using Apple's own AirPods brand, which I don't know if you know this, but was like totally setting Kelly off because they're not AirPods.
And I didn't know this, but I am not surprised at all.
Right? And they're over the ears, and they're 550 smackaroos.
Because you are mostly pedantic, I'll point out they're 549 smackaroos.
Mostly. You are mostly correct. By which I mean, definitely entirely. You're entirely correct. Yeah, definitely. $549.
Yeah, I have to point out that I do miss these times.
Same brother. I always like it when you agree to come back on the show and we can sort of just fall back into our familiar patterns.
It's, you know, isn't it amazing just how easy it is? It's very natural. But anyhow, you're asking me about the over the air and through the woods pods.
AirPods Max.
For
$549, just shy of $550.
When I first saw the press release come out, because believe it or not, I never shut off my IFT recipes that push alerts to me every time an Apple press release comes out.
I am not surprised.
Yeah. So when I got the notice, I went and read it and I'm like, wow, $549. So on one hand, that seems like a lot of money. But on the other hand, there are other products out there that that do the same thing, that fall in the same price range. So while it feels overpriced to me, I don't know if it really is overpriced. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Apple or fanboy them in any way, because I haven't tried them, so I honestly don't know if they're worth the price. Wow, that's a lot of money to shell out, unless you're serious about your audio. And then if you're serious about your audio, boy, they better be really good, because you will know if they're not.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting thing. Now, we talked a little bit about this on TDO. It was me and Dave and Kelly. We talked a little bit about this, and we talked about the fact mm-hmm. that one should expect Apple to be selling a product like this at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I had misremembered that AirPods were considered expensive at first. And Dave pointed out that, in fact, they were actually considered inexpensive at first compared to everything else on the market. But the AirPods Pro were definitely considered really expensive, and they've just turned out to be hugely successful and nobody thinks about it anymore.
Yeah, I love the AirPods Pro. And when my AirPods finally die, I'll get whatever version of AirPods Pro are out there.
Fair enough. I have both. I used AirPods extensively, and then I used AirPods Pro, and I still mm-hmm. do. And yet I ordered a pair of AirPods Max.
Well, for you to order the AirPods Max, it makes sense to me. Even if they turn out to be something that you return or sell, although I have a feeling you'll probably end up keeping them.
I will probably keep them, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if my guess is that you will find that the sound quality is good enough for what you are expecting out of them, and that because they fit so tightly into the Apple ecosystem, because they'll do the same thing like your AirPods will, where you can jump from device to device that they're connected to transparently. And just having them fit into that whole ecosystem will be really nice.
And they do have a line in. They've got a 3.5 millimeter line in. So I'm using, for instance, right now for this podcast, I've got my original, what did Apple call them? EarPods?
The ones that are wired?
Yeah.
EarPods, yes.
Yeah, AirPods. Okay. And I've got, I mean, who knows when I got these? Probably with like the iPhone 8 or something. I've had them for a long time, is my point. And I use those because they're handy and because I can do a wired connection, because for podcasting, one needs a wired connection. No latency.
Yes. No latency. I'm using wired in-ear monitors from Westone. So, yes, I'm totally with you. I have a question for you that I'm assuming, because you are who you are, that you will have an answer for. And also, it means I get to be lazy and not actually do the research myself. On the wired connection part, am I correct in my assumption that you actually need to get the Lightning to 3.5 millimeter adapter to use them as a wired connection?
Well, from an iPhone, yes. But if I have a 3.5 millimeter to 3.5 millimeter.
So it actually has 3.5 millimeter on the headphones themselves.
Oh, I thought so. Maybe I misunderstood that though.
That's a vague thing for me, because the way I interpreted it was that it's a Lightning connector on the headphones themselves.
Let's see.
I know it ships with the Lightning to USB-C cable.
Right. I think it's for charging, though.
Right. That's for charging. Now, and here's another thing. Do you charge in the case, or can you charge them outside the case? Like with AirPods, they have to go in the case to charge. Is this the same with AirPods Max?
My understanding on this case is that it's a bra. It's just a holder. I don't think it's a case. I am looking. I could have sworn.
So if the case is just a holding unit, then I bet my interpretation is right. Booyah. And that there's just a single lightning connector port on these, as opposed to a lightning and a headphone jack. That would be so Apple.
Yeah, you might be right. It may be. I wish I had thought to look this up.
Well, hold on. We have an internet right here. What if I go to the Apple Store, click buy for AirPods Max? Sure, we'll pick Space Gray. And no engraving. And
what are you looking for? The text
lightning box? To USB-C cable. Well, that's what's in the box. Oh, I thought it was going to show me accessories next.
So Matthew Panzerino had tweeted earlier, right after they were announced, they do not support USB audio. We knew that. Only 3.5 millimeter via optional cable.
And I just found the cable. Lightning to 3.5 millimeter audio cable, 1.2 meters. So what is it's a $35 cable you have to buy.
Yeah.
And it's white or black.
White or black. So it's not a 3.5 millimeter jack. It's only the lightning jack.
So it is just the lightning.
Yeah. How interesting.
Now, since they're selling the cable for this, does that mean that you can't use the lightning to 3.5 millimeter $10 adapter that used to ship with iPhones?
Sure seems like you could. This may take some actual hands-on testing to know for sure. And I will be doing that once I get the... Mine don't show up. Mine are currently scheduled for December 31st to January 8th.
Okay.
I'm hoping that creeps up as we get closer, but that's what it was when I ordered it. And I ordered the same day.
So either they have low inventory or they are selling quite a few of these. This doesn't come with a charger either.
Correct. It does not. It also does not come with a charger. But the $99 HomePod Mini comes with a charger.
Yes, it does.
That seems so crazy to me.
I agree. I know I've said this before. This is not the year Apple should have ditched the charger in the packaging.
I'm going to bet. Yeah, I agree with that. This is not the year for that.
Yeah.
Although now that Apple has done it, everybody else is doing it too.
Well, and Apple didn't do it first.
Hmm.
This is a thing that was being tested in the UK by carriers working with, I think it was Huawei, and maybe even Samsung, where the cell carriers, they were selling smartphones without a charger.
I see.
And it was a test program to see how it worked. And it worked so well that they're like, yeah, we're just going to stop doing this. Or meaning including the chargers, because everyone's really happy with how this is working. And then I don't know what happened, but it just didn't go anywhere after the test run. Although some of the carriers still on their websites, when you go and pick the phone, you can choose to filter on whether or not it comes with a charger.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So looking at these things, the we're talking about a price.
Mm-hmm.
And one should have obviously expect that Apple premium price. The thing is, there's two aspects of this. This is the point that we made on TDO this week after they were announced, was that from a market standpoint, in other words, from how the market is pricing other premium over-the-ear headphones, we would have expected these to be at $399.
Is it, yeah, okay, that sounds reasonable, yeah.
And we also talked about the fact that there are plenty of headphones in the $500 to $1,000 range, or really probably even more like the $700 to $1,000 range. And of course, there are headphones that are even more expensive than that. But in that $700 to $1,000 range, they're mostly planar headphones, with a different kind of speaker mechanism. It's a lot more expensive to make and has a much different sound profile. A lot of audiophiles like planar speakers and planar headphones. But these are not. These are traditional speakers. It's a 40 millimeter driver, which isn't even the largest driver for a speaker. And that's Apple didn't go $399, they went $549, $150 more than that.
All right, so here's what I want to know about these. And this is something that you and I can't know today because we can't listen to them today. How good do they sound? I mean, do they sound like they're punching above their weight, if you will?
I suspect they will. Dave pointed out that he doesn't like Apple's sound signature.
Yep.
And I do. So yeah. That's a subjective kind of thing. I'm actually anticipating enjoying these, but here's another point that I'm going to write up. Hopefully I'll publish it tomorrow, Friday, Thursday when we're recording this Thursday, the December 10th,
Thursday, November 10th.
I think that, okay. What gave me this idea to write about this was someone that we both know and love who may or may not have been on this show in the past called the fact that Apple has been working on the AirPods Max for 6 years, which was a story that broke. I think Bloomberg broke that. Right.
Was it 6 years or 4 years? Because I thought it was, they started in 2016, which would make it 4 years. Not that makes that much of a difference.
I may be conflating the six there with 6 years for 16. So however long it's been, 4 years or 6 years. And the initial reaction from some quarters was that was pathetic and ridiculous. Here's the thing. What we know about Apple says that if it took 4 years to develop these things, there's a reason for it. And I'm not trying to be an Apple apologist here. I'm not trying to apologize for this $550 price tag. I'm not trying to say that because Apple is charging it, it's okay. But I am saying that there is probably a reason why these things are priced where they are.
I'm assuming you're right. And I am also... willing to change my mind after hearing them or seeing enough real world reviews that say, wow, Apple blew it. But okay. So here's the thing, 4 years to develop. Now, is that taking a piece of information and running with that in a vacuum? Or did they really spend 4 years working exclusively on this product? And it really took them 4 years to get AirPod Max done. And if so, I mean, what did they really do in there that it took 4 years to do headphones? But these things have spatial audio.
But spatial audio already exists.
Right. But are they considering the time working on spatial audio as part of the development process for this? And are there other elements that were happening for AirPods Pro and AirPods that were happening for AirPods Max? And that stuff was happening as far back as 2016. My point is, first, I don't want to be an Apple apologist, but I want to know really what 4 years means. Because if it was exclusively AirPods Max development, and that's not including development for any other of their audio products that are sharing technologies, did they need to have 4 years to do this?
Well, I would argue that Apple's past track record says that the answer is yes, that they did need that time because they took that time. And I would further argue that unless Apple has suddenly decided to charge, there's a horn just going off outside my house, so that's fantastic. I hope it never stops.
Well, I mean, this is a crash you bear. I mean, you have fans driving by the studio honking at you because they love you, and we can't fault them for that.
Stopped at such a track. So unless Apple has suddenly changed its margin strategy, there is also probably a reason why these things are $550. There's probably a reason why it took 4 years to develop them. And there's probably a reason why these things are $550. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the market is going to be willing to pay that. People may decide that, yeah, fine, it cost you this much to make these things, but I'm not willing to pay for the thing that cost that much. Like, for instance, maybe it is the exact exact angle and formulation of the headphone, of the headband, and the material, the web that stretches between them. I'm sure that a ridiculous amount of work went into making those as supremely comfortable as possible.
And I'm sure you're right. And I'm sure they spent a ridiculous amount of time getting the curves on each of the headphones exactly the way they wanted, and angles for all the microphones. They probably spent just ridiculous amounts of time going over the tiniest little details like that, because that's the thing Apple does. And then I wonder how many versions they made with different types of buttons on them before they decided, hey, you know, the digital crown we're already using on the Apple Watch, let's put it on these headphones.
Right. Yeah, lots of time testing that. And back to your original question too about what does 4 years actually entail. I imagine there was initially a small team working on these, and that team probably got larger as they got closer to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would assume so. I just had a thought about these, because the digital crown on Apple Watch, I can tell which wrist I'm going to be wearing the watch on, so it puts a digital crown where it's appropriate for me being left-handed. Mm-hmm. Since you can pop the little fabric muff parts off, mm-hmm. is there a way to tell the headphones which ear the controls are going to be on? So then you put the left muff on the correct one, and now you can use the controls left-handed, or is this just a right-handed control? At $550, I would expect that I can tell it which is the left ear and which is the right ear, so I can control this with my dominant hand.
Hmm. I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, when you get yours, try it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I will totally bag on Apple if you can't flip these around and have the control on the correct side for your dominant hand.
For sure.
And I'm betting once Kelly hears about that idea, she'll be completely on board too.
No, she won't be. She will not be on board with these.
She's not a fan of these?
No, she's not a fan of these. Too expensive. They're too expensive for a lot of people. They're expensive. It's a lot of money expensive to pay for a set of bloody headphones. And most people do not care about the quality. I mean, look at Beats. I hate the way Beats sound. Beats, my old line is like, Beats drags your music through, you know, a muddy swamp of oatmeal. And
That's a great way to describe them. Yeah, I do not like Beats.
But there are lots of people who like that sound profile, and they're quite popular. And there are people who don't like Apple's sound profile. Like, you know, Dave can't stand the way HomePod sound. I personally enjoy the way HomePod sound. That said, I wouldn't have gotten these if I didn't like, no one else was going to get them on staff. And we need to be able to talk about them. So I went ahead and, you know, took the bullet.
And you took one for the team.
I took one for the team. But I wouldn't, I don't think I would, like, just if left to my own devices, I probably wouldn't have. Because it's a lot of money. $400 $400 is a lot easier to say yes. $300, I think, is probably way easier for a lot more people to say yes. $400 or $399 is probably also in that range where more people can say yes. But $549, definitely.
Definitely $549.
Definitely $549 is enough for, I think, a whole lot of people to go, are you kidding me?
Yeah, this is not a product that I would buy just because I like Apple products. I mean, geez, I can buy an Apple Watch for less than these headphones.
Yeah, fair point.
Fair point. And I already have a pair of JBLs that I really like, so... You know, yeah. I'd be more inclined to buy a new Apple Watch than these headphones. I can certainly do a lot more with it.
Sure. What color would you get?
We talking about Apple Watch?
No, we're talking about AirPods headphones. Max.
Oh, if I was getting the AirPods Max, I would definitely go with the Space Gray.
Definitely Space Gray. I almost got the Silver. But went Space Gray.
I don't blame you. I've just really liked that that darker color that Apple has come up with.
Yeah, I bought, by the way, my keyboard. Okay, fine. I was eating a snickerdoodle and I dropped it and there was sugar that went all down my old keyboard. Fine. I'll admit it.
And so you got the Space Gray Magic Keyboard, didn't
correct.
You?
And I paid Apple $5 to send to have a courier drop it by my house. $5 to do that for.
That is fracking cool right there.
It is.
The whole Apple courier thing.
Yeah. Oh. And they gave me a 1 hour time frame window that he met.
Yeah. Okay. The fact that you can have a delivery show up when you expect it to.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. That is a very Apple thing right there. That is not something most other companies could actually do.
No. And I got to choose my 1 hour time frame.
That is just wonderful. That's almost worth buying something to have delivered just to have the experience of it shows up when it's supposed to.
Yeah. So anyway, but I did choose the Space Gray Apple keyboard. I almost got another ASIO keyboard. I broke my ASIO keyboard in a tantrum a couple of years ago. That's the one that was sort of like sort of retro-y, sort of steampunky, sort of
real I remember clacker. That.
I clacker. I loved that keyboard, but I had a little tantrum. I broke it. I almost bought another one of those, but decided to go ahead and get for the quiet reason so I could, you know, like type during podcasts. I got Apple's keyboard. I got the Space Gray, and it looks great.
You know, I can imagine, it's actually pretty easy for me to imagine. I don't have one, but years ago, I got a it was a Matthias keyboard where it's Bluetooth And I could choose a space gray color for it in the black keys. And that's what I use when I'm podcasting because it's quiet. And it looks really nice.
Yeah, Matthias makes good stuff for sure. For sure. All right. Let's see here. Let me tell you a little bit about BetterHelp. They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and they do it online. I am a very, very big believer in this, especially in the trying time that 2020 has been. You can connect in a safe and private online environment. It's very convenient. You can also start communicating in under 24 hours. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling. And again, I am a very big believer in this. I am happy as can be that these folks are sponsoring this week's Apple Context Machine. So you can send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Services available for clients worldwide, too. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. And they have licensed professional counselors who are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, and self-esteem. Anything you share is confidential, it's convenient, it's professional, it's affordable, it's online. Again, I'm a really big believer in this. I'm so happy these folks are sponsoring us. So if you want to start living a happier life today as a listener of the Apple Context Machine, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor. It's betterhelp.com/ACM. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp. It's HELP.com/ACM. All right. Sorry. So for my next topic, I like to say, we have, I wrote it down as Irish cream, but that's just because I was drinking an Irish cream latte at that particular moment. We have some news out of Ireland. They're saying over there, the Irish, they introduced legislation, or they have publicized legislation, but it hasn't been adopted anywhere. Plus, you know, this isn't an EU law. It's an proposed Irish law, saying basically that streaming services have to have 30% of their content as quote unquote European. Now that would include British, even though Britain is leaving the EU because the Russians win, but you know, whatever.
So instead of, I just want to make sure I've got this right. So instead of all the content, or 30% of the content has to be EU originated.
European.
It's European, yes. In general, which, yes, includes that little island stuff off the coast. Right. That would be
Ireland, Ireland's neighbor. Because Ireland.
Yeah, Ireland's neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. The one aspect of Ireland is not leaving the EU. I guess that would be Ireland proper. Northern Ireland would be whatever. So I'm not a fan of this particular proposed legislation. What do you think?
I'm not a fan either. This seems kind of like a weird legislation. And I mean, I can appreciate wanting to take steps to ensure that that there are jobs that are happening or that are created in the area, and wanting to have content that's representative in some way. But at the same time, I don't think this is a good idea.
It's just an annoying idea to me. And of course, it opens up a potential Pandora's box because, you know, China could say the same thing. Japan could say the same thing. Malaysia could say the same thing. Malaysia's probably not going to say the same thing, but I could see China doing something like that. I don't actually see the Japanese doing anything to that effect, but this sort of ham-fisted attempts, it's pretty typically European, but it just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's taking it to the extreme. It's government dictating what content can be made.
Right. Now,
and I know it's not really that, but, you know, it kind of is at the same time.
There is a time, in my opinion, and different people can have very different opinions on this and be reasonable about having those opinions. There is, in my opinion, a time and place for protectionism to foster local industry, to keep, you know, the rest of the world from, you know, basically turning your country into a client state. And I get that. I mean, like, I absolutely get that. And I also get the idea of folks not wanting Hollywood to dominate all of their content. I get that too.
Mm-hmm.
But sticking a 30% requirement to me means that there are going to be some crap shows that are bought to fill the quota. And that includes Apple. That includes, you know, Netflix. It includes Disney. I mean, how much of Disney's content is made in Europe? Any of it?
I'm sure there's some on location stuff that's done. And no, I have no idea how much of their content is really made in Europe. You know, if something like this went through, this would be a really great opportunity for a really cheap animated production company to pop up in the EU and just crank out tons of crappy content really fast, and then just sell all this animated stuff to the various streaming services just as a tool to meet quota.
Yeah, quota stuff, yeah. Yeah, and that to me doesn't seem like a great way to foster local industry. But, you know, I could be wrong. I mean, there is probably some method to, you know, whatever it is, whoever was cooking this up. I mean, I guess it could have been picked out of a hat. I don't know.
My guess, yeah. Well,
I can't see something like this actually leading to me having better content to watch. And if it is content that is chosen to meet a quota, no one's going to watch it anyway. So what difference does it make from the standpoint of actually fostering the local industry?
Yeah, I agree. This is not how you you get quality content generated. This is how you get content that meets a legal requirement generated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious if this proposed law would look at how much of a production is done in Europe versus other places. Like, you know, like if you're doing stuff on location, mm-hmm. and so you're shooting in multiple locations around the world. So if you have a show that's filmed, say in Bruges and then in the Congo, and then off you go to Japan, and then part of it's in the United States, because part of it was shot in Bruges, would that qualify as this is a production that mm-hmm. that meets good question. Your 30%, or does it have to be 30% total of that production time?
Or is it just who owns the company? like, where's the production company based? For instance, so if a company is based out of, say, London and films something in Asia and Africa, to your point, would that count? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the I would assume, but it is an assumption, that the legislation actually specifies and stipulates all of these details.
I would certainly hope so. And I'm sure it does. That could really put a lot of... it could really hobble a lot of productions because of requirements of where they would have to shoot.
Yeah. Or how about take a show like Gold Rush, one of my favorite reality shows. Follows gold miners up in, I think, currently mostly in the Yukon. And I believe that the production company that owns the show, it produces the show, is American, but I believe that the film crew and the film crew company is all British. So how would that count? And it's being filmed in the Yukon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so to that end, there's a lot of U.S. productions that are shot exclusively in Vancouver.
Yeah, oh yeah, a whole lot that are filmed in Vancouver.
That's not EU, but definitely a direct tie to the UK. Does that count?
Probably not. It's definitely European. It's not European. It's North American. There's no way in 100 years. And I doubt, by the way, that a show like Gold Rush, which, by the way, is on Discovery and is not on one of the streaming-only services, there's no way that would qualify as European either.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope this doesn't pass. This just seems like a bad implementation of something that came out of a discussion where someone said, wouldn't it be great if there was more of this content being produced where we are?
Yep.
And someone else said, yeah. And the next thing you know, there's this legislation and
of course, you know, maybe the reality is that there are like all these great shows and they're finding that the big American tech companies who have these streaming platforms aren't giving them a fair shake or aren't giving them the time of day. Maybe that's what they're finding, and they're trying to force that to change. Just slightly. I mean, I realize that's like not even like the other side of the coin. It's more like a particular, I don't know, it's like the edge of the coin or something of what we're already talking about.
Well, still, that's a really interesting point. If that is the case, to me, that comes down to economics. And if you look at productions, so North American productions, for a very long time, that was focused around Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And then that all migrated up to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And that was because of economics and the costs. So if the costs were appealing throughout all of the EU, then there would probably be more of that content that is produced there versus Vancouver.
Sure.
So maybe instead of saying, hey, you have to have 30% of your content produced this way, why not come up with some package that incentivizes the different companies to do more of their production in the EU?
Right.
Does post-production count as that? Like, you shoot in Vancouver and then do the editing in the EU?
I doubt it, but it could. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, and it's going to be interesting to see if it actually gains any traction and eventually, like, if Ireland passes this law, it would technically only affect Ireland.
I thought it was Ireland proposing this as an EU law.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I might have misunderstood that.
Well, I mean, either one of us might have this wrong, because right now there's a lot that's in flux with who's part of what, and yeah. But yeah, my take on it was this was proposed by Ireland and was going to be an EU requirement.
Yeah, that actually, and that would make more sense. I wish I'd actually thought it through before I said it. So let's just... So yeah, it looks like Ireland's proposing this as an EU law.
Oh, good catch! Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned to me right before we started recording that you somehow broke your camera glass on your iPhone. Which iPhone do you have?
I still have the 10. I'm going to get a 12 Pro, but I just haven't yet.
I'm not shaming you, buddy. Like an animal. I mean, you know, that's...
I know.
Not even a 10S. I mean, come on, man.
The 10S didn't have enough going for it to make it compelling enough an upgrade from the 10 for me.
Just giving you a hard time. So you have an iPhone 10, and you somehow managed to break the glass on the camera, which is like... not thin glass.
Oh, it's even worse than that, because I have a case on my iPhone.
Okay.
And still managed to break the glass. What happened was I got out of the car. My iPhone must not have been in my pocket all the way. And it came out. And then you know how the world goes into slow motion? Mm-hmm. And I watched this iPhone. Yeah, it's like you were there. And it came out and it's like perfectly flat to the ground, and it goes straight down and hits the ground, bam, on the backside. And it's in the case. And I'm like, well, that's why I have it in a case. And I pick it up, and the camera glass is cracked and chipped. And I look down, that's the one place there's a rock just sitting there in the parking lot.
I'm sorry that happened. But then you told me something even more. I mean, okay, I am fascinated that you were able to break your camera glass. That's,
yeah, like, me
that's
too.
Quite the accomplishment. But then you also replaced it. So I want to hear about that.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at my iPhone, and I'm thinking, this is my camera. So I need to do something about it. And apparently, the fix, if Apple does it, is to replace the entire back of your phone.
Okay.
And that's a few $100s.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, I'm not spending $300 or $400 or whatever it is to have the whole back panel of my phone replaced, mm-hmm, when it's just this one piece of glass. So I did a little research and found out you can buy a sapphire glass replacement pieces on Amazon. And so I bought a kit that actually included two of the glass pieces. Okay. And it had a little X-Acto knife and these needle nose tweezers that have a...
So you had to pull your case apart.
No.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
What I did was I took a little jeweler screwdriver and started chipping away the rest of that glass. And once I got that glass off, then I used the X-Acto knife and scraped the adhesive out of the way. By the way, if you ever try and do this, iFixit, I love iFixit. iFixit is the best for so many things.
Yes.
But their article about replacing the glass on this, mm-hmm, is flat out wrong.
Oh, interesting.
It says it's a 5-minute process.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I was very meticulous. 5-minute process if you knew what you were doing.
Maybe if you had the right, maybe you probably have to heat up that adhesive with one of their super hot guns, and it probably takes about 5 minutes to get it to melt enough so you can pop that off and then you just stick a new one on.
Right.
I was very meticulous, and I made sure as I was chipping glass away, I was always working with the screwdriver going away from where the lenses are, so I wouldn't accidentally like slide and across and nick the camera lens itself. So the process for me was 2 hours. and wear safety glasses, people. Because little bits of glass come flying up. So it was one of those things that when I started, as soon as I chipped out that first piece of glass, I'm like, oh crap, I'm committed. That's it. I'm just committed. That's it. And when I was done, I put the new glass in place, and that's it. Now I'm going to pop that glass off and put the other one on, because I realized after I put it all together, somehow I managed to get part of a thumbprint on the inside.
Everything I'm sorry, works. Your replacement, you managed to get a thumbbprint.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do about that?
Since the kit that I bought for, it was like $10, mm-hmm. came with two pieces of glass, I'll just pop this one off and put the other one on.
Oh, when you said two pieces of glass, I incorrectly assumed that one was for one lens and one was for the other.
Oh, no, it's a single oval piece. It looks like a giant Tylenol that's flat.
Oh.
And it's actually painted black on the backside.
Okay.
But not painted where the camera lenses would stick or show through, and there's even a little hole that goes all the way through for the microphone.
But you got two of them.
Yeah, it just came with two. So I'm like, sure, why not?
Great. So you're going to do it again?
Yeah, and that's fine, because I can consider the first one a very successful dry run. And actually, for most stuff that I'm photographing, it's not a problem that there's that little bit of a fingerprint on the inside. But if I'm trying to do something really close up, it's a problem.
All right. First of all, I want to apologize to listeners. So Ichabod has decided that this was the time to prance around in circles with one of his stuffed toys. I don't know if you heard that.
And then I just assumed Ichabod was excited that we're talking about me being a doofus and breaking my iPhone camera glass.
He was. And then he decided that it was time to drink water about 8 feet away. And just now he decided that it was time to take his heaviest toy and play with it in between two of the legs of my microphone stand.
That's awesome.
So
absolutely awesome.
Anyway, I apologize for the extraneous noise, folks. I would have been intimidated to do what you did, which is to actually make this do this repair yourself. So I
can appreciate that. Yeah, it's it can seem intimidating, and like as soon as I started digging into that glass, I did for a moment have that knot in my stomach.
Yeah. Right.
Thinking, this was a one-way path.
Right.
And whatever happens next, I'm just going to have to either be happy or learn to cope with the damage that I've done to my phone.
Sure.
And actually, if you were to see the back of my iPhone now, you would have no idea that I replaced the glass.
That's nice, man. That's nice. So when are you going to do the second repair?
Maybe I'll do it this weekend or maybe not. It depends. You know, my schedule's a little in flux right now because I'm going through orientation with my new office manager. I don't know how that's going to work out for weekend stuff.
That makes sense. And then what are you going to do to keep from putting a thumbprint back on there?
I've already got this figured out. This time I'm going to start by getting my camera lens cleaners out and make sure everything is really clean before I put the glass in place.
Yep.
And now I get how to really use the tweezers that it shipped with. The kit shipped with, so that I can drop that glass in place without touching it with my fingers.
Okay. And do you have to break the glass again? Or do you know how to pull it off?
It depends on how strong the adhesive is. So this is either a 15-minute project or another 2-hour project. I have no idea.
Either way, 2 hours and $10, way better than $300.
Oh, yeah. So the moral of this story for me is that even though there's not much we can repair on our iPhones, if you've broken the glass over the cameras, this is something that mere mortals can do. They can fix it themselves. You just have to be very patient while you go through the process.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Thanks for sharing that, man. I very interesting, again, in part because I'm personally so intimidated about trying to do something like that.
No, I get it. Even I had those few moments where I did not feel good about what I had just started.
Sure. Sure. All right. So first of all, check this out. Mm-hmm. See how I did that? I want to thank you, Jeff, for being on the show this week. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on again. It is always fun to get to hang out and chat with you.
Yep, indeed. I also want to thank our sponsor, my sponsor at the very least, would be BetterHelp. You can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/ACM. You can join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ACM. I want to very much thank them for sponsoring us this week. And also, I think I have some things I'm supposed to say here. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to question, comment on, add, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Bass was recorded by Boom just for TMO. And that is all for this week. And one more time, Jeff, thanks. I'll talk to you later.
This is a blast.